Halfway through what is our Monday night / Tuesday morning show, depending on where you are and who you are and how you listen, what your schedule is. It's funny, I made a new friend recently. She's a teacher, and we had arranged to catch up on the phone on Monday, and she asked me how I was doing, and I said, I'm all right. I just woke up. This was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and she didn't quite understand that, so I had to explain. Yeah, my schedule's pretty much the opposite of your school schedule. Yeah, it's funny because as I'm waking up every afternoon, or most afternoons, I wouldn't say every afternoon. In fact, Wednesday, I'm not sleeping at all, so there's that. When I wake up, my mom is usually just getting home from teaching her classes, and so it's my good morning, and it's her good afternoon, but already the end of her workday, at least on site on campus. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or you can check out our Facebook page, our podcast, our YouTube channel. All of those tend to be found if you Google After Hours with Amy Lawrence. In fact, right now, there's this weird thing happening with my laptop at home. I do not know why. It's a brand new laptop, and it's not the laptop, really. It's whatever server. But I used to be able to see the podcast on my laptop, and now, for some reason, it doesn't load correctly. And so I have to Google every single day to find the link to our guests so I can share them on social. I have to Google, for instance, Amy Lawrence with Matt Parrino podcast, Amy Lawrence with Sean King podcast, and the link pops up, no problem, but for some reason, our podcast page does not load correctly on the server I'm using, which I think is Microsoft Explorer. Not one that I would use, but it's the one that's loaded on this new laptop, relatively new, going back to Christmas. It was my Christmas present to myself because I desperately needed one. So we've got one more show this week before I take off on my summer vacation. I know that sounds weird, but it is still technically summer. It's the end of summer. And I will be out from Wednesday through Tuesday morning following Labor Day. So this is actually, it's not quite a week, but it's pretty close. It's actually my summer break to refresh and rejuvenate and re-energize right before football kicks off. It's already started to get hectic, right? It's already started to spin a lot faster in the sports world. We're now days away from the NFL season kicking off, and that will feature Bills Rams at SoFi Stadium, home of the Super Bowl, home of the Super Bowl champions, and they will start us off with a Thursday game. A lot of new elements to the NFL, not just the movement among teams and players, but also broadcast teams. It's going to be interesting to kind of get used to the new voices on some of these broadcasts, not to mention Amazon Prime, who will be carrying Thursday Night Football for most of the season at a lot of AFC West games, if you hadn't noticed. So a lot of us will be adjusting. There are a lot to get adjusted to, but I'm looking forward to it. The big news on Monday was Jimmy Garoppolo and a restructured contract with a no-trade clause that will keep him with the Niners unless he agrees to be traded somewhere else. And that's the piece I think is kind of the give and take of this deal with the Niners. He's giving up a bunch of money, though if he ends up starting and playing, he could make a lot of that money back. But he's taking from the Niners control. They can't ship him anywhere in the NFL now. He has a no-trade clause, meaning if he wants to stay in San Francisco for the entire season, whether as Trey Lance's backup or as the starter, he can. He now has control over that. That's what the Niners give him. They also cannot tag him next year. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, they decide, you know what? Trey Lance may need some more time, or and I do not want this to happen, but Trey gets injured and Jimmy Garoppolo starts for a good portion of this season and they would like to keep him around for one more year until Trey recovers, but they can't tag him. They'll either have to give him a long-term deal or they'll have to let him go because he will be an unrestricted free agent when the season is done. So he's got another year in which he has to play for the Niners, potentially as a backup. But after that, Jimmy Garoppolo's got the control over where his career goes in 2023 and beyond. So that's the trade-off for Garoppolo with this new restructured contract. That's the big news coming from the NFL on Monday. Of course, there will be more. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Over the weekend, as we've talked about, with Matt Parrino of Syracuse.com on Sunday night, the Bills were in the spotlight for the wrong reasons. And whether you agree with how they handled the Matt Araiza situation, because they did know that there were allegations of rape against him as far back as July. Now, I'm going to believe them that they didn't know at the draft, though there have been rumblings that other teams steered clear of Araiza because they knew something like this was out there. But the Bills claim they knew nothing going back to the draft when they picked him in the sixth round. They did, however, get a heads up from the young woman's attorney in July. July, incidentally, is also when the San Diego Police Department gave San Diego State University the clearance to begin its own campus investigation. For the first time on Monday, we heard from the athletic director and the head coach at San Diego State. This is where Matt Araiza and two others who were accused in the civil lawsuit were playing college football last year. According to San Diego State, and we're going to hear from them here momentarily, the reason they did not launch a full-out investigation, the reason why these players were not removed from the team or identified publicly going back to October and Halloween when the young woman first went to authorities to say that she was raped at an off-campus party, which was taking place at Matt Araiza's residence. The reason none of that was public is because the San Diego State Police Department, San Diego Police Department asked the campus to wait. That's what San Diego State officials are claiming, that they were told to stand down, so to speak, until the police department could go through its investigation. For whatever reason, in July, the university was given clearance to go ahead with its own investigation, even though right now the San Diego Police Department continues to investigate whether or not they will file criminal charges. So that's ongoing. The police investigation has now been handed to the district attorney, and they're working on whether or not they will file charges. But no real timeline's been given. If you think about the Deshaun Watson civil lawsuits, he's not accused of the same thing. That's not why I'm bringing it up. If you think of the Deshaun Watson civil lawsuits, it took until, was it April of this year, for the authorities to finish their investigation and then the district attorney to announce that there would be no charges filed. I can't remember exactly when Deshaun Watson joined Cleveland, but I'm looking right now. So even though the women, the massage therapist, accused him in 2021, and actually some in 2020, even though it goes back a year plus, the authorities in Houston and then the district attorney didn't decide or not decide to file charges until earlier this year. And then, of course, he was traded from the Texans to the Browns. Maybe it was a little bit later. It might have been late spring when he joined the team. So now bringing it back to these allegations against the San Diego State football players, it took place in October. Law enforcement has gone through an investigation. Now those findings are in the hands of the district attorney. But still, there's no specific date when that DA's office will decide to file charges or not. It's a slow process. But that would explain the timing. In the interim, this young woman and her family have filed a civil lawsuit. Maybe because they believe their story, these allegations, will go unheard and will be ignored unless they do. And let's be frank about it. Nobody was saying a word. Nobody seemingly cared across the country or with the Bills or with San Diego State until the civil lawsuit went public on Thursday. So I guess if what they wanted was to bring attention to her case so that something would get done, it worked. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Again, San Diego State is claiming that they were told to delay any investigation on their own until the San Diego Police Department could finish its investigation. And to that end, J.D. Wicker, who's the athletic director, was speaking about Matt Araiza and these allegations on Monday.
I'd like to take a minute to address the civil case brought against football players connected to our program. Foremost, the university's investigation is active, so there is very little I can share. I can confirm that Pa'a Iwaliko and Xavier Leonard are not currently members of the team, but I cannot provide more specifics and will not be answering questions related to either of those players or Matt Araiza. To be absolutely clear, we take allegations of sexual assault seriously and do not support any actions or behaviors that cause harm to others. As husbands and fathers, Coach Hoke and I fundamentally agree on this. Under no circumstance would we ever support an environment that supports abusive behavior. Students found to be in violation of the Student Code of Conduct through our university's investigative process will be disciplined, and that discipline could include suspension, dismissal, or expulsion.
This is an active investigation. It's ongoing. I will not be providing specific information about the case or the players. I want to reinforce that we have and continue to support the criminal investigation done by San Diego Police Department, and we also support the district attorney's review of the case. What was reported to have happened should never happen, ever, and it shouldn't happen to anyone. And what has been important to us is that anyone who violates or violated the law or university policies, they'll be held accountable. We preach accountability in this program, and as we have always said, we are committed to hold accountable students who violate the university's policies. I'm a husband and I'm a father, and we deeply respect, believe me, and appreciate the women in my life. And I can guarantee you that it's intolerable for what has been reported. There's no protecting anyone. We're not here to do that, and that's part of being accountable. There's no support or encouragement or a code of silence. And so we won't compromise on that. We will hold ourselves and our community and our players to the highest standard.
That's the voice of Brady Hoke, who is the head football coach at San Diego State. And before that, athletic director John David Wicker. And they made the point multiple times that the reason they have not looked into this more extensively or before now is because the San Diego Police Department asked them to delay their own investigation until the authorities finished their investigation. Both of these guys read prepared statements and then did not want to take questions from the media. So they're getting set for a football game coming up this weekend. It's week one in college football. Essentially, everybody gets on the field this weekend. And so they're trying to talk about the start of the football season, Brady Hoke specifically, but the questions just keep coming about the Matt Araiza allegations and the other two players.
It was reported, or we learned fairly recently, that Matt Araiza's name was revealed through the portal. At that point, the football program probably could or should have known about his potential involvement. Did you have a conversation with him? Were you aware at that time, and why did he play the remaining?
What are you talking about?
In the portal. He was.
The portal?
Yeah, there was an anonymous report that Matt Araiza had been involved. You're saying you weren't aware of that until the civil suit came out?
I was not aware.
Not before Thursday, last Thursday. You didn't know a single name.
All right, guys. We appreciate the time. No. Thank y'all.
So they got up and walked out because Brady Hoke was there to answer questions about football, but that's not what the media wanted to ask about, of course. So you hear them get up and walk out. Now, they did return separately. The athletic director returned to answer questions, but he came back out by himself without Brady Hoke. Hoke then was answering questions about football, kind of. And so football became secondary, as it should be. But San Diego State maintains not only did they not know the players who were implicated, they did not know the players who were being investigated, including Araiza, until just recently, until the lawsuit came out. But they also were told to wait on their own investigation until law enforcement could finish theirs. The Bills had an open practice on Monday, and at least one member of the offense spoke out about the Matt Araiza situation. You'll hear from him coming up next. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
It's not a situation we take lightly. I'm hurt. I understand they're hurt. It's emotional. It's not easy to hear about some of the things that I've heard about over the last several hours, say, and haven't slept a lot, to be honest with you, because this is a game, but there's other things that are more important than this.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Bills head coach Sean McDermott going back to Friday when he made the decision, and he said it was his decision, to keep Matt Araiza off the field and away from the team in the Bills' final preseason game. This is roughly 24 hours after the civil lawsuit was filed and the Los Angeles Times got a hold of it on Thursday, last Thursday. So as it circulates and more people become aware, and obviously the pressure and the questions mount on the Buffalo Bills, McDermott sits down following the preseason game, really doesn't answer any questions about football. Instead, you can hear the emotions and the weight that he's carrying. The next day is when Brandon Bean announces that he, as the general manager, has made the decision to cut Matt Araiza, the rookie punter who had just won the starting job. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. As we learn from Matt Parrino, the Bills insider who joined us from Syracuse.com on Sunday night, Monday was the first opportunity since pre-pandemic for reporters to mingle with players at practice and have open access to them, have an opportunity to hang out with them and talk like they used to. And that's how reporters form relationships with players. That's how players get familiar with reporters, so they know who they're talking to. But many locker rooms and clubhouses have been closed and practices have been closed over the last few years. So Matt was looking forward to it, and no doubt many other reporters around the NFL were doing the same. Buffalo center Mitch Morse is one who spoke publicly about the situation with Matt Araiza.
There's so many unknowns that, and I know there's a bunch of cliche answers you probably have already heard, but it's the truth, you know what I mean? You try not to have the court of a public opinion affect yourself, but it's hard not to, you know what I mean? And it's just one of those things that in the end, it was a hard decision for the organization to make. I think they made the one that made the most sense. As a guy in the locker room, you know, it's tough. You know, some guys have kids, and it makes you think of both situations. You know, I think it was one of those great tests as a group to see where we could go from mentally. You know, it was right before a game. It definitely caused some conversations in the locker room, I think healthy ones between guys. And, you know, it's just one of those things that it's incredibly unfortunate for both parties. And I just hope at the end that both parties find some peace in this and it sorts itself out.
There is no right thing to say in this situation, especially when you're talking about an investigation that as yet does not have a conclusion. As I mentioned last segment, the San Diego authorities, they've wrapped up their investigation. And just as a reminder, the young woman who was 17 last fall did go to the police. She did go to the hospital. She did have an examination done and a rape kit performed. She did do what you're supposed to do when you've been attacked. Man or woman, sexual assault or no. She did. She was brave. At 17 years old, a high school senior. Could you imagine if the allegations are true and yet she had the wherewithal, the bravery, the courage to go tell someone? There are many people who don't do that because they're ashamed, they're afraid, they're embarrassed. Maybe they can't remember. In the lawsuit, there's an indication there may have been a date rape drug of some sort that she had in her drink. There are many reasons why, all to speak for young women, though certainly there are men who get sexually assaulted too. There are many reasons why young women, high school and college age, do not speak up. This young woman did. And for that, she should be applauded. She should be praised. I know it doesn't help. I've never been in her shoes, but I can't even imagine the mental and emotional and physical anguish that she went through if the account that she is telling is true. And again, there is physical evidence. She went to police. So the San Diego authorities say they've wrapped up their investigation, but there's been no determination yet on charges. So it's hard to know what to say. I understand the emotion and the frustration and the defensiveness of Matt Araiza's parents. You may have seen the story. I'm sorry, not the story. You may have seen the statement. Please forgive me. That's what I meant to say. The statement that they put out there about their son. This was Monday in the wake of him getting released by the Bills. His parents are Rico and Carrie. He has been extorted, discriminated against, harassed, and the subject of multiple and continuous threats of violence and death. He has been released from his job, and our entire family continues to receive horrific threats of violence and death. We have all been canceled, every member of our family. Salacious rumors, so that's what they choose to label this lawsuit. Salacious rumors grew as fact. There are multiple witness reports to deny the claims that are made against him. The legal system is designed to find the facts and make decisions. They should be allowed to do that. Yes, the legal system, for sure. But that has nothing to do with the court of public opinion, nor does it have anything to do with a private employer. I guarantee you, if a lawsuit was filed against me or one of my colleagues alleging something similar, my company, my bosses, would not wait until the legal system had played itself out. At the very least, there would be a suspension. But more than likely, there would be a termination of employment. You may remember, this is a different type of example, but along the same lines, in that they were sexual harassment and in some cases sexual assault claims made against many members of the media, primarily in the sports arena, going back to the start of the Me Too movement. Think about the number of men who lost their jobs, even though there were no criminal charges filed and there were not even civil lawsuits in most cases. Nah. The allegations alone were enough to cause these employers to let, in some cases, big names. Matt Lauer, he was NBC News. And the last I knew, he was still fighting to protect his innocence or defend his name. No, private employers don't need convictions to part ways with employees. In some cases, it's just about, hey, we don't want to deal with this. Hey, we don't want to be embarrassed. We don't want our name and reputation to be slogged through the mud. We don't need you enough that we want to go through this with you. The NFL is a private employer. It's a massive employer, but it's a private employer, as are the Buffalo Bills. They do not need to wait for the legal system to terminate an employee. I mean, heck, sometimes a guy can botch a play in a big game and he's out of a job the next day. That's football. This is serious. It's real life. So if you are frustrated that the Bills released this young man without there being a conviction, without there even being criminal charges to this point, keep in mind, criminal charges have nothing to do with the NFL. And it actually, in the case of the NFL, he is not going to face any type of discipline, regardless of if he's convicted, because the NFL bylaws indicate that if you're not in the league at the time that you are accused, or in some cases, if you know you engage in the types of behavior that would get you discipline, if it didn't happen while you were a member of the NFL, they can't suspend you or discipline you for it. And there's many examples of people in the NFL now who either pled guilty to something or engaged in a plea deal or on and on. But it happened when they were in college or before they got into the NFL. And so the league does not suspend for those things. So Matt Araiza could, if there are no charges filed and a team is comfortable bringing him on board, he could sign with another club. But the Bills don't owe him anything. They don't want to deal with it. This is not what they want in their locker room. And you hear what Mitch Morse has to say. It's uncomfortable. It's difficult. It's tough to even read the allegations. And it's better for the Buffalo Bills if they aren't dealing with it. It's as simple as that. This is not an indictment of Matt Araiza any more than it is an indictment of how difficult it is to win in the NFL and locker room dynamics and public pressure, for sure. Again, the NFL is not beholden to the criminal justice system, nor is your employer probably, nor is mine. I feel for his family. People are vicious. At this point, I hope we hear something sooner rather than later from the San Diego authorities. And I hope justice is done for the young woman. And if these people, men, if these men are accused erroneously, I hope justice is done there too. But there's no denying that rape on college campuses is rampant. Sexual assault, rape, gang rape. It's not uncommon. I can't imagine being in her shoes. If nothing else, it took a lot of guts, a lot of courage to face her fears, to go public. At some point, her name will come out too. And you can only imagine what she and her family will go through. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page as well. Thanks for hanging out with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50. Into the rock pile in center field in Anaheim. It's 4-3 Angels after home run number 50 for Aaron Judge.
2-2 game in the fifth. Next pitch swings and drives one deep into right center field. This ball's carrying deep, and this one is out of here. Shohei Ohtani has just hit his 29th home run of the season. Angels are back on top.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A bit of a power display, a power surge, if you will, in this game between the Yankees and Angels taking place in Anaheim a few hours ago. And yes, Aaron Judge hit home run number 50. But no, the Yankees did not win the game. In fact, it was Shohei Ohtani's home run that also brought Mike Trout around the base paths that gave the Angels the lead that ultimately held up. Terry Smith on Angels Radio, and is it Brendan Burke handling the play-by-play duties for the Yankees radio network, I believe, while, and yes, he's with Susan Waldman, but John Sterling is not on this road trip to the West Coast. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Aaron Judge now has 50 home runs, though this one comes in a third consecutive loss for the Yanks.
It's great, but, you know, I'm kind of upset about the loss. You know, it was a close game that we could have won. You know, we had a couple opportunities, but, no, we'll talk about how it feels once the season's over with. You know, we got a good group of guys in here that continue to show up every single day, putting the work in, and, you know, I'm just trying to do my part and be a part of this team and do what we need to do to, you know, put ourselves in a good position, you know, going into the postseason. So, you know, when you're showing up to work every single day, you know, with a plan, a mission to go out here and win the game, you know, you don't get caught up in, you know, individual, you know, numbers, good or bad.
Okay, maybe Aaron Judge doesn't, but certainly people who are watching do get caught up in individual accomplishments and individual achievements, especially when you're talking about an Aaron Judge who could have Yankees history in his sights, right? So he says it's just another number, but he's only the 10th baseball player ever to have 50 home runs twice. How about that? You would have thought there'd be more than 10, wouldn't you? Jay, would you have guessed there's only 10?
No, I would have easily thought more.
Mm. And just while we're talking about numbers, this is crazy to me. There were closer to 45,000 fans than 44. So more than 44,500 fans. A sold-out Angel Stadium crowd for the Yankees. Now, I know the Yankees are super popular, but Aaron Judge is the most popular, and he's a California native, right? So he heard chants of MVP when he was rounding the bases after he hits that home run. Compare that with 11,000 fans at the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati to watch Albert Pujols and the Cardinals. I get it. It's Cincinnati, and right now their team is abysmal. I certainly understand. But why is there not a bigger crowd to see Pujols and his assault on the history books? I don't get that. We'll hear from Albert himself at the top of the hour. So Aaron Judge, home run number 50, only the 10th in baseball history to have multiple 50 home run seasons. Never would have guessed that. He's now on pace to hit 63. Pace means jack, but there it is. You may remember during his rookie season, he had 52 home runs. the rookie record, but it was broken. I wouldn't say shattered. As Pete Alonso for the Mets had 53 the following season. Or no, following 2 years later, right? It was 2 years later when he had 53.
My effort level was outstanding.
Aaron Judge joins Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, as the only Yankees to ever have multiple 50 home run seasons while they were wearing the Yankee uniform. A-Rod had two 50 home run seasons, but only one of them was in New York. The other one was with the Rangers. I went to a Rangers game the year that he did that and went to a Rangers game the year that he did that. This was at the old ballpark, not the new one, obvi. And he had three home runs. There was nobody there. It was hot. It was the summertime. One of his home runs went into the upper deck. And my boyfriend and I at the time, we were just walking around. And we got to the ball because there's nobody else up there. It's August and it's hot in a lot of places, but not Cincinnati, so I don't want to hear it. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Yankees lose their third consecutive game. Right now the lead is 7 in the American League East. The Mets actually begin a series with the Dodgers coming up on Tuesday night. You're not going to believe this, but the Dodgers actually have a magic number now. That's how insane their second half.
And Freeman, the hitter, 2-for-4. Hard ground ball to second base. They're going to get it. Not a double play. Freeman beats the throw. In to score is Bellinger. There is nothing that Luke Williams could do except try to get a double play. They're going to have to give up a run, and the Dodgers take the lead. 2 balls, 2 strikes, 2 out. Foul off to the right. Freeman in foul territory's got it, and the Dodgers hang on and win it 3-2. The magic number is 15. Winning their 89th game against 38 losses, 51 over 500, and the Dodgers will take a happy flight to New York, winning in 10. Beating the Marlins 3-2.
Weirdly enough, the Dodgers have scuffled with the Marlins a bit, but they get this victory to wrap up what was a quote-unquote weekend series. Charlie Steiner's not pulling your leg. The Dodgers are, in fact, 51 games above 500. They will be the first team to 90 wins. I don't know if it happens on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday against the Mets. It's quite a clash between two first-place teams. Mets have 82 wins, Dodgers have 89, and now they're piecing together their rotation. There was some talk that Clayton Kershaw could return for this series. It doesn't look like he's going to, but they just lost Tony Gonsolin, who is he at 16 wins now, 17 wins? I'll go back and check his record. But he's on the IL with some forearm soreness, and so that's a blow to the Dodgers.
Just felt kind of tight coming out of the last outing. Had dealt with a little bit of the forearm tightness earlier this year. Thought it was going to go away in a couple days. It just kind of lingered this time, so we're going to, push back, miss a couple starts, which is okay. It just feels more forearm tightness. Definitely feeling optimistic with it. I think, whenever the IL stint is done, I'm going to be coming off and feeling 100% ready to go.
So the Dodgers say it's precaution, but it is quirky that the top two wins leaders, that sounded awkward, the top two pitchers in terms of wins so far this season, they're leading the majors in wins. Justin Verlander and Tony Gonsolin, both at 16, are now dealing with injuries. Trey Turner gets hit number 1,000. So Will Smith has the big blow with a home run, but it's Trey Turner with a big milestone, 1,000 career hits. And then this is kind of fun. Chris Martin had to enter the game against the Marlins in the bottom of the 10th with the bases loaded. The Dodgers traded for him in July, and he gets his first save in Dodger blue. It's interesting how some teams struggle with teams that are below 500 and opponents that are below 500, but generally a lot of those teams look at these games against contenders as their World Series, so they put everything into it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.